We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by the Genesis Company, coming at Wednesday morning. It's now February 1st. And as I am every Wednesday, I'm joined today by Wolves beat writer from Pioneer Press, Jace Frederick. How you doing, Jace?
Hey, good, man. I'm ready for, I don't know. I'm still just like getting my body adjusted to having a home game like every night, every other night.
How did Tom Brady do it for 25 years? He didn't do
well.
That.
He played once a week. Yeah, I mean, I could do this. This once a week, I could do it forever.
Are you okay with Tommy hanging it up?
Yeah, I actually grew to be more and more of a Tom Brady fan over the last couple of years. Like, I really liked his doc on ESPN that documented all the Super Bowls. I liked his social media stuff. It was like just funny enough, but never obnoxious. So like, I appreciated
that dad,
the personality. Yeah, exactly. Right. But it was like good dad humor. But I do think like watching this last year, like maybe it was their team. Maybe he just wasn't as good. I don't know. It wasn't as enjoyable to watch Tom Brady in this last season, particularly not that wild card game. So like, I'm good with it. Maybe he would have corrected course this next year, but if he didn't, I don't want to watch like multiple seasons of Tom Brady and being like, dude, be done.
Right. Yeah. That's the worst thing possible. I don't know why my head goes to KG there. Is Tom Brady right older than Kevin Garnett? Is Kevin Garnett? Wait, Tom Brady is 45. KG is what? I think he was like 39. Yeah, he's probably about the same age. Isn't that crazy?
That's like, just because of how long KG has been out. And I get it. Like, you know, you can say, oh, blank played until this long. Like, quarterback's like the only thing where you can actually do that.
Right.
But yeah, it's pretty wild. Like, KG's 46.
46, Tom's 45. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that is not what we're going to be talking about today, is Kevin Garnett and Tom Brady. We're gonna hit on where the Wolves are at now. Obviously, Britt and I talked for a long time yesterday, kind of about the month of January, specifically about that last game against the Kings. We'll get into some of that stuff today, Jace. But as I was saying before we recorded, I feel like the only newsy sort of Wolves thing in the past, I don't know, 24 hours, is Tim Connelly went on KFan with Dan Barrero and sort of, you know, got the whole trade deadline grilling midseason. Where is this team at? Where is it going? What's going to happen at the deadline? And I thought, not that it's particularly newsy, but the one thing that just kind of stood out to me most was a little bit more detail from the team side about, excuse me, where Carl is at, like in his return process. It's kind of what we've been hearing for a lot from the team in terms of reporting on where this injury is at. He was like, we have never given any sort of timeline on what this was from the beginning. There was maybe some misreporting in there with the 4 to 6 week timetable, but he's like, it's always been indefinite for us. Dan pushed him for a timetable of what it could be going forward. And Conley said he wanted to stay away from that. But Conley did say it is their full expectation that, and that's a quote, full expectation that Cat will be back at some point this season. I guess that's just my way of asking you how you are thinking about if and when Karl-Anthony Towns comes back, like how you are baking that into your coverage, how you're baking that into the way you think about this team going forward for the rest of the season.
Well, just the way I'm thinking about the team, I'm forming like opinions about this group right now, you know, and what they're good at, and what they're bad at.
Just kind of been fun, right? Like I've actually enjoyed like a 30 game sample of like a group that's, it's pretty much been the same group, right? Sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, yeah, some ancillary pieces out here and there, but like it's all been very, you know, ant-centric and seeing how guys have found their way and playing around him, which I think is what you see for like this organization moving forward in the long-term future. So like kind of getting a first look at that and what type of guys fit best around him. And I'm totally ready to like throw it all out basically once Keck gets back, because it is such a different team roster, all of it, like play it with the things they do will have to be different. Like, that's what's interesting is like we had these thoughts of like, oh, the Wolves probably stack up like right here in the West or whatever. Mm-hmm. But once Cat gets back, it could be better. It could be worse. So it's that's very interesting and makes it kind of challenging to forecast where this thing's going to go.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. It is this wrinkle coming that we don't know exactly when it will come, and it will completely change. It will change what these 30 games have been. Like, I do think the team will remain ant-focused. I don't know how it couldn't. I think certainly more than it was in the first 20 games of the season when Cap played. But, I mean, there's a myriad questions, right, of how Kyle Anderson fits in the mix, given how important he's been there. Is Cat going to just try and be feeding Rudy the whole time? Like, is Finch going to do the thing where he spreads Cap more just as a spacer? I mean, it's all these things we've talked about, and now the time's kind of getting close. I mean, I'm kind of looking at like the next three markers here in the season of trade deadline on the 9th, All-Star break on the 17th, whatever that is. And then probably after that, I think the Wolves first game after All-Stars on the 24th, probably that next marker is end of February Cat returns. That's just where I'm at in my head. I've said a couple times on here that's sort of been my expectation for a while, is after the All-Star break. I mean, when we talk to people around the stadium and stuff like that, right, the word has been we're waiting out this Cat thing and getting him back and hoping to go on a run, right? Like that is what I think both of us have heard, and you just don't know when that time is that he's going to come back and when this run happens. But is there anything else we can really say about this other than that's what it is?
Not really. I mean, Connolly saying like, yeah, I mean, I'm confident he'll be back this season, you know, like, and that was basically the level to which he was pressed by Dan Barrero on that one. Like, the good thing about Barrero is there are so many different radio shows guys can go on and you don't even tune in, because it's just, like, it's not even the interviewer's fault, but you just know they're not going to get much out of it. But, like, Barrero, it's going to be pushed on every pressing topic. So, like, you're going to get some responses. Oh, yeah. So, Tim Connolly, who you hear some from, not a ton. But when he goes on there, he's going to be asked about everything, and he's going to be asked multiple times about everything until he gives true responses, and they're going to be legit follow-ups. So,
oh, like, he did. And with D'Lo, too, I mean, he kind of hit – and everybody can – I think you can go listen to it on kfan.com. I'm sure it's up there if you go to their social and go back to listen to it. It did end up being like a solid 20, 25 minutes that they had Conley on for. So he asked him about D'Lo, too, at the trade deadline, as Dan does, was like, can you definitely say that D'Angelo Russell will be on this team after the All-Star – or after the trade deadline? And Conley was like, it'd be disingenuous to say anybody would definitely be on the team. So the pressing didn't really get anything there, nor would it. Like, what is Conley going to say? Oh, yeah, we're actually probably going to trade him. Or,
I mean, that would
be like, what? Right. Or if he was like, no, definitely we're not going to. That would be almost equally bizarre. So I don't think too much newsworthy from that. I just wanted to bring up the Cat thing off the top, because that's going to be the next thing coming up here in the discourse.
It's always part of this team's discourse too, right? Like, everybody's like, where's Cat? And I think part of where's Cat is like, why is he not at the arena? And like, the team has like, well, it's part of his recovery plan and whatnot. And, oh, now he's in a boot and all these types of things, like on social media posts. And so I guess like the lack of clarity, the lack of like really having a firm sense of the direction, mm-hmm. like usually with so many of these injuries, like even long-term ones, it's like, oh, they will be reevaluated. in so many weeks. And then you ask about it, and it's like, well, we think they're going to be able to return to on-court activity in two more weeks or something like that. And then that starts a slow ramp up. And there just hasn't been any of that with Cat, which I think drives some people nuts and is like, what else is going on here? But I do think it's important to note that we have had almost the exact lack of clarity with Jordan McLaughlin, who has who also has a calf strain, who's been out nearly the same amount of time. And they are also like, you know, I think Finch used the word inching forward here with J-Mac. And like, he's there, he's at the arena, he's in the locker room, all this other stuff. But like, just as far as returning to action, we're getting about the same amount as far as updates of like, we'll see, you know, and that's what's so interesting about this. Like, it'd be interesting to dive in more into this injury in general, like comparing the calf strains and like, why has this been so, I don't know, so like unclear as far as what's going on with these guys or like when they can do anything, like getting any sort of timeline. And I know now the team's not going to jump to a timeline because of like what Kat had said, like on his Twitch and whatnot, like, you know, team said indefinite, but he's like, I don't know where these numbers came from. That was never true. So now the team's not going to push anything out there because probably not wanting to upset Kat in that way. But it's like I'm saying, it's the same for Towns as it's been for McLaughlin. So like, it's just kind of,
and you know, Jace, the boot thing has been the same too, right? Like J-Mac wasn't in a boot for a long time of it. Then he was in a boot and now he's not in a boot, you know? And I don't know if and when a boot goes on or not. I mean, Carl makes it more public with his injuries on his Instagram. Right. He did the same thing with when he got the PRP injections in his knee and wrist that was reported. He posted a picture of his leg isolated in one of those like air cast things. And that was because he got PRP injections, and it ends up being, you know, like you have to isolate your leg for a while. So I just assume it's something like that of why he was put in a boot or now. And he posted it. I mean, if you just go on that sort of pattern of behavior, maybe he got a PRP injection in his calf. I don't know. We don't know exactly what's going on with this thing. The one thing Conley that did strike me from that is he kind of hammered home the point of that this is complicated, and particularly complicated with like a 6'11 guy who weighs 250 pounds. That medically makes some sense to my dumb medical brain that it would be more complicated. And it's kind of sounded like it's one of those injuries where the player, star player, is also seeking some of his own medical advice, which isn't rare and is kind of normal for a player who has hundreds of millions of dollars to, you know, to be doing that. So I think it's complicated. I think that's what's going on here. And it might just be one of those injuries that is genuinely an indefinite recovery. And that 4 to 6 week, whatever that was at the beginning, kind of maybe distracted from how complicated this is.
Yeah. And if you look, like, if you just remember the night when Kat went down, it was like looking at the actual leg, like as it happened, it was like, ooh, you know, everybody's assumed Achilles tear or something, you know? So like this still in the grand scheme of like, when you watch that injury, even if it was like 2 to 3 months or whatever, 3 months or whatever, as you watched it, you would have been like, oh wow, that's amazing, you know, like that's amazing, he'll be back that soon. Now when it gets the label of calf strain, you're like, oh, 3 months for a calf strain, that seems like a long time. But it just watching it in general, like watching it on TV that night, I was like, oh my gosh, that looks terrible. So
I mean, just think about if it was an Achilles, just like
you're looking at a year, you know,
you're looking at a year and it's an Achilles. And it's when this dude has 6 years and like $300 million left on his contract, you know, like people can be frustrated with the lack of clarity on the timetable, but that worst case scenario that didn't appear far away from happening was a really bad scenario. You know, if Cat would have, you know, actually tore his Achilles. So all things considered.
What was that with KD too? Like, was that a calf thing that he was coming back from? And then he suffered the Achilles.
See, yeah, that's what I was thinking too. And I don't want to like totally speak.
No. I'm just saying, like, I understand a player like wanting to go as like, you know, like if I'm a player, that's entering my mind, you know, like, and the Wolves aren't like pushing Cat back clearly by any stretch, you know, like it's just like these things just are complicated and they take time, and there's like, and you know, there are different levels of severity and different ways that guys recover. Like, I don't really look too much into the fact of how long this is taking. I really view it as something like it's going to take as long as it takes.
Tweet out anything or get emails on this stuff, you know, people always reference, oh, well, there's never been clarity on this injury stuff, you know, and the Rosas time. And I remember writing about that all the time. And it was genuinely confusing. And I think it was intentionally confusing because they were tanking to get Anthony Edwards. Like, obviously they're not tanking right now. And like trying to make you believe Carl's going to be back or something like that. I do think that happened a couple years ago. And maybe the motivation was like selling tickets or whatever. That logic does not apply here because this team does not even have their first round pick. So I don't know. Injuries are tricky and annoying, and reporting on them is like one of the most bizarre things in this because nobody wants to talk about it, yet everyone wants to know about it. I'm like, okay, I guess we have to like talk and think about these things. But you know what? Now we're going to be done talking about about Cat's calf.
Overarching thought is just like, yeah, this is taking a while. That happens, you know, like this is obviously like not like a little minor injury. It was a severe calf strain or whatever, like, you know, and different guys are going to recover differently and exactly what all the circumstances around it are. There are two serious calf strains on this team. They're taking a while to recover. It is what it is.
And what has always happens, you can back me up here too, is once we have all this confusion and stuff, once the player's back, we can again start talking to them. And write that in there. It's like, remember the Jake Layman thing? We're like, what, Jake Layman, he's day-to-day, whatever. And then we talk to him right away. We ask him about it. He goes, oh, yeah, right away I knew this was, like, the doctors told me it was going to be 2 or 3 months. I tore this ligament, whatever, whatever. Like, details are going to come out, and I feel particularly confident with it being Carl, who is very much a sharer. Whenever the time comes back and he has the mic in front of him, we're going to hear all about it, whether it was PRP, whether it had to get amputated and sewn back on, whatever, you know, like the details are going to come out about what this is. And I think like genuinely, it's just fun and interesting to focus on this group as it is currently constituted. It's shown us so much about Ant. That was my hope going into all of this. And so let's just keep rolling with this time. And then chapter 4 of the season, last chapter is how I'm thinking about it, and Carl's going to be back. And that's its whole own mystery. But let's take a break. We'll be back with Jace. We'll actually talk about some basketball. Today's show was brought to you by the Genesis Company. The Genesis Company is the MVP of the business game. With their advanced marketing techniques, they've helped over 300 brands generate over $3 billion in retail sales. So if you're an entrepreneur with any size brand or product, they're the best in the business. And for being fans of the pod, they're offering free access to their proprietary AI technology that helps founders uncover the true potential of their brand. Find out how big your brand or product should be. Don't let your competition steal the lead. Email them at grow@thegenesiscompany.com and claim your spot at the top of the game. That's grow@thegenesiscompany.com. Today's show is sponsored by Falling Knife Brewing Company, located in Northeast Minneapolis. This week at Falling Knife, there'll be multiple Wolves games on their TVs and projector screens with the sound on. You're looking for a place to watch, gather with friends for the Wolves, do it at Falling Knife with other Wolves fans who are locking in on the Wolves playoff push here. We also want to let you know about Falling Knife's Super Bowl party on February 12th. $45 gets you all you can eat from Mario's in St. Paul and 2 free beers. If you're looking for something to do for the Super Bowl, you can get those tickets by checking out Falling Knife on Twitter or Instagram at Falling Knife BC. And then also, if you're just really into craft beer, that's what Falling Knife does. They'll be tapping a keg of their rarest, most highly rated beer. It's called Screaming for Vengeance. It is a double barrel aged imperial stout. That stout spent 18 months in a Heaven Hill barrel, then an Eagle Rare barrel from Casanova Liquors in Hudson. So check out what Falling Knife really does too, which is make high level beer. Whatever it is you're looking for this week, check out Falling Knife Brewing Company in Northeast Minneapolis, located off of Broadway Avenue. All right, Jace. So I wanted to talk with you a little bit about the end of that Kings game and the spread offense that they face. Britt and I went into that pretty extensively. We played the audio from Rudy talking about it after the game, referenced what Finch said. And this is just something I personally enjoy doing, is like thinking about different teams around the league and what they can do to punish other different teams' sort of weaknesses or minimize their strengths. It's one of my favorite things about the playoffs in the NBA. Like, I don't care if it's Sixers, Nets, or whatever. Like, I love watching the chess of that in basketball. I feel like, honestly, it's where I learn a ton about what works in the NBA and what doesn't. And I think we've talked about a lot of these different sort of micro things, whether it be different defensive coverages, whether it being, you know, Carl on the floor with Rudy versus like how you would handle that in a playoff series. And I think that Kings game highlighted or reminded us that one of those things in the playoffs will be teams opting to go with a spread look against the Wolves, as the Kings did in overtime, or not doing that. How did that, just isolating for that Kings game, change your view or remind you that this is kind of going to be a thing for the rest of the season, into the playoffs, and kind of probably the entirety of the Rudy experience in Minnesota? Because that's what it was, you know, in Utah as well. Like, where are you just at in your head with how the Wolves can or cannot handle spread defense? And then I want to talk, or spread offense, and then I want to talk kind of about specific things. But where are you at on it?
I think for me, the biggest thing about it is I don't think it like exposes Rudy Gobert as like, well, he can't do this. What I think it does is it does mitigate his impact defensively. Like, he can't control and dominate the game defensively when you are spreading out and making him, you know, guard somebody in the corner. That literally takes him away from his element of where he most dominates the game defensively. It doesn't mean that he's all of a sudden a bad player on the court. It's just that, okay, now he's just another guy. Like, he's just one of five defenders. He's not like the defense, and everybody else is kind of funneling things into him. And we'll talk more about this, I just think it puts the onus on everybody to defend when you do that. And that is where more things can be exposed. Like, there's no hiding anybody anymore in like a spread game. It's like, you have your guy and you have to guard your guy, because if we have to help, whoever has to help, that means that we are going into serious scramble mode and somebody's going to be left open.
Yeah. There is less help. That is the biggest thing. And that was, I really liked Rudy's answers he gave to us when we were asking him about that. You know, after the game, he's like, just the reality of the situation is if I'm on the ball side, like, I think at this point, everybody can kind of picture that first Malik Monk drive and kick out to Trey Lyles, right? And what Rudy talked about, he goes, if I'm on the ball side, I can't be the help defender there if they have five shooters on the floor. And then that help needs to, if anywhere, it needs to come from the opposite side, the low man, which we kind of, it was like Jaden in that situation, but it is different.
It is different. And what I want to know, though, is, so Rudy knows that. So did he just come help because he could sense that nobody was coming weak side? Or did he make a mistake in helping there? Like, what would I would like to like break down these plays. Like, you say you can't be the helper, so then why were you down there? You know, was right. That your instinct at that point? That you
yes, hadn't, dude, hadn't I think that's what it is. Yeah. I mean, I remember, you know, there's honestly, like, YouTube has a ton of stuff on Rudy in those playoff series and stuff. And after they traded for Rudy in the summer, you know, I went and was like watching through all this stuff. I was like, okay, I really need to like comprehend what this was and what it wasn't. Cause it was totally a thing where I think, quite frankly, a lot of the people analyzing the NBA at a national level did not have the skill sets to understand what was and wasn't happening. That was the ways Rudy was and was not getting exposed offensively. But just going back and watching all of that, the error defensively I saw in Rudy, and I think is somewhat like understandable, is this natural instinctual inclination to shade in, right? And when you've played your whole life as a 7-footer, the biggest guy on the floor, you are naturally going to gravitate towards the rim. And I would assume that's some real like hard wiring to let go of and let go of that instinct. Like, I think about that. You know, when Jaden missed that three in the corner against Utah, like, Ant drives, Walker Kessler, who was on McDaniels, like, comes over to help. He, like, came too much. And I think that's because that is what Kessler is so used to doing in his basketball life the whole time, is like, I'm going to prioritize taking away the rim here. And I think on that play, I think Kessler came over too far. And that ended up being a great play, a great look. Like, that was a clean Jaden McDaniels corner three. That's probably not what you want to do. And I think
Nas did the exact same thing against Toronto.
Exactly.
Left OG wide open. And Ant, after the game in the locker room, was like, why did you help? I told you not to help. He wasn't even Ant wasn't even the guy guarding the ball there. But like, and it, Nas just like smiled, like shrugged, basically like, I know it wasn't supposed to help. I just did it, you know, like,
but you got like
his instinct is to go block shots, you know, like that.
Yep. And that's just in the playoffs, what Rudy will need to fight. And the team will need to like, it will need to be recognized that it's happening. And you got maybe like one possession grace period of like adjustment. And I think Rudy recognized it after that first going back and like watching all that slow. Rudy was like, this is what this is. And he looked over to the bench after that first Trey Lyles three. And at that point, what they needed to be able to do is like, we got to push this button, whatever it is. It's our shell concept. It's whatever. The rest of this overtime, we are playing this way. And they did not do that because really this was, that wasn't Rudy's first rodeo with that. But for D'Angelo Russell, Jaden McDaniels, Kyle Anthony, you know, like for the rest of the guys, it kind of was. And so I'm almost certain they have or will be going through this because they know they're going to see it again. Like they're definitely going to see it again in the playoffs. And whatever it is, you got to be able to click into what it is you're going to do there, because if not, it's going to be a shit show where Rudy is, and it's going to be this whole thing where Rudy can't guard all of this stuff, which is disingenuous. Like, but they've got to hammer it out now, because I think in the playoffs, whether it's a team like the Clippers or the Mavs who do it for 48 minutes, or just some teams who do it situationally, like they are going to see spread looks in the playoffs, probably even more so when it's both Rudy and Carl on the floor. So I sent this to you in the email. When we're just looking at these Western Conference teams, which we did last year, or not last year, last week, we talked about in advance of playing the Grizzlies and the Pelicans and all those teams. We were talking about which team is the best matchup for the Wolves. And I found those games against the Pelicans, then the Grizzlies and the Kings to be informative in like, okay, we've seen what this group, this Ant-led group looks like against those type of teams. We hadn't really seen that yet. And I think it kind of changed some things for me and my personal understanding of who I think the best or worst matchups are for this team in a playoff series. How did it impact you watching those four games? Do you think differently about how the Wolves match up against the Pelicans, Grizzlies, and Kings after watching the Wolves play them last week?
You know, those two specifically, to some degree, but I literally do now after watching that overtime, and like I just don't think it's something that Minnesota is going to be to the point where like they figure it out, you know, where they are like, no, we can handle that well. Yeah. And we can play really well against that. So I definitely watched that, and like you just basically did out loud there, like I think through the teams that can give you that look and can do it really without changing who they are. And like they can just play to that effect. Like I think of, and you know, these teams, unless it's like a 4-5 series, it's not even likely for like that they can, that this will be like a first round matchup. It maybe could be more like a playing game, but like Phoenix can do that so comfortably. You know, like whether Ayton's on the floor or not, you can take Ayton off the court and you can just play like, you know, Paul, Booker, Bridges, Johnson, and then whoever you want at the five, like Torrey Craig. You know, it doesn't really matter. And Dallas, obviously, quite a bit of ease, you know, like as they did literally to Utah last year. The Clippers, they can do it, but they don't have the same level of shooting. So I don't worry as much about like if the Clippers do it.
You don't
like,
think so? What makes you say that?
I just don't like trust those guys as a bunch of knockdown shooters.
Okay. I mean, they're pretty good numbers wise though.
Yes,
like,
I understand that. Yeah. Okay. I know. It's certainly not a matchup that I would look for if I was Minnesota. Right. I don't think it's a great one. But like, and then you look at like, it's almost like the Grizzlies, like teams that have fewer guys that can knock down shots, like those are the ones that I think you'd rather have Minnesota play against, which, you know, Memphis is going to be like a 2-seed again or whatever, but that's not a matchup that matchup wise, I think should scare Minnesota. Like even the Pelicans, like we see all the size they have, but like, I just think shooting is what should be what scares Minnesota, because I don't think they're going to match up well with shooting. I think shooting can be the thing where it's like, these guys don't belong on the same court because they're giving up open looks again and again and again. Even the Kings, like when they had their full blown lineups out there, not like going necessarily big, I thought, and correct me if you think otherwise, but I thought Sacramento got a lot of good looks from three and they just didn't knock them down in two games, as Herter was like, has fallen off a cliff right now. So I think Sacramento is also a team that would give Minnesota problems in a playoff series too.
So I had Sacramento as of the options as the most ideal matchup.
Okay.
For this. And to be honest, I don't think any of them really are. Like, okay, so let's assume the Wolves finish.
What about Memphis from a matchup perspective do you not like? And now we saw him play without Desmond Bane. And that Desmond Bane is just a huge part of their offense because they need his scoring, frankly, I think, to be like an elite level team. But what about Memphis do you really not like from the matchup perspective?
Do I not the offensive rebounding threat?
Okay.
I think is could be really problematic for this team. General physicality. I liked it better last year when they had more of that the fly around thing, right? The aggression, the putting the two on the ball with Ja, I think, and that being their defensive identity. I think the Grizzlies were a team where that look worked well against. That was the ideal type of team to run that against, you know. Get the ball out of Ja's hands, right? That's not the identity of the Wolves defense this year, the aggressive coverage, particularly when Gobert's on the floor. And if you think about it in the playoff series, like Gobert's gonna be playing like 36 to 40 minutes a game, you know, barring foul trouble. So I thought it was a really good matchup for the Wolves last year with the Grizzlies. I think given how their roster has changed, and the way they defend, I think is different now. But the physicality and offensive rebounding problems remain. So the things they were good in that matchup, I think, went down, and the issues that were there still remain. So yeah, I still have them as a hard matchup, though. I do. I have them third on my list.
Okay. See, Ja has not been like his volume numbers have been fine, but shooting numbers have been bad. Three matchups against Minnesota again this year, 11 for 25, 8 for 20, and 10 for 21. I just even watched that last game, and I felt this all year. And I know like playoff series extend beyond that. Playoff games in general extend beyond that. That's why Memphis won last year's series. But like, I feel this way. I felt this way in the playoffs last year. I feel it after watching three games this year. Like, Memphis cannot score against Minnesota in the half court. That is something that I think we'll just.
And maybe Jaden on Ja is just enough. You know, Jaden's gotten better as a defender. Maybe you don't need to put two on him. Maybe Jaden can just navigate that decently well enough, regardless of what the coverage is. Like, you're right. It has still, the Wolves have still looked good against Memphis. Actually, so this is the way I let me just read off these teams. So the way I looked at it, I gave you the list of eight teams, is basically the top eight in the West right now. I think if the Wolves finish somewhere between 4 and 8, assuming they get out of the play-in, like the teams they could match up with are the Nuggets, Grizzlies, Kings, Pelicans, Clippers, Mavs, Suns, Warriors. And I kind of put those into three different groups. I think you have the Nuggets, Grizzlies, who go in a pair because I think they're the two best teams in the Western Conference. I think the Kings and Pelicans, I put in a group for the Wolves, like as how they match up against the Wolves, kind of lack of experience there too, I factored in. And then with the Clippers, Mavs, Suns, and Warriors, I think in that group, you have teams that can spread this team out, plus they have more experience, plus they have kind of two guards or two perimeter isolators who I think could hurt this team. That's been a problem for this team, is needing to defend the point of attack on multiple defenders. So I actually have the Clippers, Mavs, Suns, and Warriors as the hardest matchups.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Which they're in the bottom of the standings, right? I mean, it's kind of weird. And I put the Mavs down as the hardest, because I really think Luka would pick at it. And you know, not a huge amount of distinction here, but if I listed it off, I said Mavs hardest, Clippers, then Warriors, then Suns. Those would be the four toughest matchups for me for the Wolves. And then I go to the next tier, which is a little bit easier. It sounds weird because, again, I think Grizzlies and Nuggets are the best teams. But I think if I were the Wolves, I would rather play the Grizzlies or Nuggets than the Suns, Warriors, or Clippers, or Mavs. And then that leaves the two remaining being the Kings and Pelicans. And between that, I think I would prefer the Kings. I think the Kings are the best first-round matchup for the Wolves of this group. But that's ironic, given the fact that they expose the Wolves with a five-out offense. I just don't think you're going to see that or them lean as much into that in a playoff series, when Sabonis is going to be on the floor. The only reason they really got to that was because Sabonis was off the floor. I don't think you can spread the Wolves out if Sabonis is on the floor. So that's kind of the way, you know, I thought about it. And to be fair and transparent, like, I said a different thing last week when we were going through that. Where I'm at right now on February 1st, I think the Kings and Pelicans are the easiest, and the hardest ones are those experienced Clippers, Mavs, Suns, Warriors teams.
Yeah, and that's where, like, the Kings, Minnesota defended them pretty well. Like I said, though, I thought Sacramento generated some good looks and missed them. Like, I think different shooting nights, we can watch those games and be like, ooh, Sacramento is tough for Minnesota to defend. I'm with you on the fact Sabonis is always going to be on the floor. I do wonder, like, if the 10 minutes he doesn't play in a playoff series now, does Sacramento keep playing Metu, or do they just go small in those minutes, you know, if Gobert is on the court? Like, it's a total chess game of how to rotations play.
Exactly.
Out,
that's what I say. Like, if it's only 10 minutes, then just...
Yeah, then the Wolves would be like, okay, well, then Gobert's not on the court in those 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it would literally probably be, like, kind of that simple. But, yeah, I actually like the Suns as, like, maybe the most difficult team if they're totally healthy. That's probably the most difficult thing to diagnose. But, like, Dallas has, like, they can spread you out really well. But I just don't trust, like, in general, my thought on Dallas is, like, they've got these perimeter shooters. They don't ever seem to shoot as well at Target Center. they're not as good. They're, like, their role players just aren't as good on the road, you know, and that's common for a lot of role players. But, like, when I look at Phoenix and I know, like, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, you know, Bridges and Johnson, like, I trust those guys anywhere. And that's four guys that Minnesota has a tough problem matching up with.
Totally.
So I think when they're healthy, I think Minnesota has an awful time matching up with Phoenix. And I think we've seen that in the past. Golden State is kind of in that same boat. Like, tonight's going to be really interesting of seeing how Minnesota defends Golden State and how that looks, because Golden State's playing pretty well. They're playing pretty well with the small ball lineup with Draymond at the five. Draymond's obviously not like a shooter, so you can still play Gobert really even more as like a free safety role if he's on Draymond, which I think is probably Minnesota's best look. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm in general agreement with you that even the Nuggets, like, you know, that game where they lost in Denver, like, they didn't have Gobert in that game, correct?
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's, I love, like, that they can put somebody else on Jokic and then have Gobert kind of roam. Like, now, ideally, I think for Denver, Aaron Gordon probably plays better than he did at Target Center and makes more shots to make that. You have to go away from that look. But, like, anybody with a five that you can, like, Minnesota can play more chess with Rudy Gobert, a five that has to be on the court, I think helps Minnesota out a lot.
Totally. It starts in the front court, right? Like, where can you best put – I think what we said last week, where can you put Rudy best to weaponize him defensively? And then simultaneously with Cap back, which this one's way more of an open question, is, like, how do you handle the matchup at the four? Because, you know, it was the beginning of the season where the Wolves were bad and in a lot of ways, and Carl was chasing Cam Johnson around. And you go rewatch that game right now, and people will be like, oh, yeah, this is the worst matchup. This is the worst matchup for the Wolves, and is that Suns one. I don't know. Like, it's hard to say, right? Was that the beginning of the season? Have they figured some stuff out? Not with Carl on the floor, they haven't. But that's why, yeah, I just kind of put all four of those teams, Suns, Warriors, Clippers, Mavs, as the toughest because they have the option to spread you out. They have experience, will have had more experience in the playoffs. And then specifically, the Jason Kidd and Ty Lue with Dallas and the Clippers, like, they know, they've literally done a playoff series against Rudy and found things that worked against them. So if I had to pick two, that's why I would put them there.
The interesting thing for Minnesota is, like, the thing with Rudy, and they spread you out, and now it's individual on-ball defense. It's under a microscope. Like, the Wolves have a roster where they can defend that. It just doesn't include two of their highest paid players. Yes. Like, Cat on the floor doesn't really work. D'Lo on the floor doesn't really work. But, like, otherwise, if you look at it with, like, you know, Jaden, you know, that basketball index chart, I think a lot of people probably saw, like, he's had some of the best on-ball defense in the NBA this year. Like, the best, frankly, by that chart. And then you've got Ant, who we've seen, like, in big moments, one-on-one defense. And that's what this is, you know, in, like, spread offense. It is a concept of playing one-on-one defense. Ant's great at it. Austin Rivers has been pretty solid at it. And then you can find, like, a Torian Prince or whoever else. And now you're like, yeah, okay, I don't think we have a bad matchup out there. But, like... D'Lo and or Cat are going to be on the court, and that's what creates these problems. So that's where, like, the Wolves can practice the spread defense. They can practice it tonight. We can see if it looks better. it doesn't matter, because when Kat's on the court, the whole dynamic of that's going to change.
Mm-hmm. And it will change too for the positive on the other side of the court.
And that was a big thing of the Sacramento game. Like,
yes,
the whole idea is you have to be able to like punish the other team. And you do that with Rudy via, you know, lobs and offensive rebounds. And maybe they would have done all that, but they had a couple bad possessions. They had a couple turnovers that just didn't even give them the opportunity to do so.
Absolutely. The offense completely stalled out. And fact of the matter, any of these teams, the Wolves in the play, when they have Cap back, they need to be a better, to win a series, they need to be a better offensive team than they are a defensive team. And right now for the regular season, they're unambiguously a better defensive team than they are offensively, right? I mean, I think they're ninth on defense and 21st on offense as we, for the season, as we sit here today. And that needs to flip. I think
the whole identity of this team will change. It has to change, yes. Because with an Ant-centric team, you can be a pretty good defensive team because you have Rudy in there. Like I mentioned, you have some perimeter defenders, like, and you can be pretty solid on that end. And an Ant offense can just be good enough, you know, like he can kind of be your offense and deliver enough spurts to where you are good enough to win games. And when Kat's out there, you're right. The whole thing has to switch. You have to be unstoppable offensively because you are not going to be as good on defense.
Let's take one more break. I want to talk a little bit about Ant, specifically the Ant offense. And then we'll talk a little bit about the Warriors matchup tonight. Back with Jace in a minute.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Jace, as we were watching the Kings game on Monday, we both were really recognizing, like, that's as much as any team has loaded up on Ant. At one point I tweeted out during the game, I'm like, this looks like a zone, because it was like the boxes and elbows, as coaches say. It was like the Wolves could have two players in the corners, and the guys who were guarding them were like on the block, and then the two wing guys were at the elbows. Like, it looked almost like a box and one. And it's because teams right now are so focused on taking Ant away. Their break glass in case of emergency is just throwing that double at him right when he crosses half court. But their preference is Ant come into what is functionally a double. We're going to be showing you multiple bodies. And we don't really trust that the other players around you can really punish us. Now, to be fair, those players kind of have been. I mean, D'Lo specifically over the past month. But I'm really curious to see, like, how many teams kind of like hit the gas on it. It's kind of like the double with Kat in the post last year, where we were like, what the hell? Why don't you just double? Like, why don't you put a small odd cat and bring the double every single time? I think it's kind of against the Wolves right now, teams. It's interesting night to night. Be like, how much attention are you going to give to Ant? Overall, the attention is ramping up. That was the most loaded up I'd seen any team on Ant, I think, all season. What about you?
And it's interesting that it came in the second game of two straight games. Like, that was like the adjustment was, yep, we need to do this even harder. And I think it worked to the sense that like Ant turned the ball over some. The offense was definitely not fluid at different parts of the game. We talked about like kind of the D'Lo Ant like give and take thing. It's definitely been because teams are coming into games thinking like, we have got to stop Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. And it is creating a lot. It's like loosening up for everybody else. And so D'Lo, when he's hitting these first quarter shots, so many of them are coming like catch and shoot, like Ant's kind of making the defense collapse, kick, kick, D'Lo wide open shot, and he's knocking them down. Mm-hmm. And then it seems like in the second half of games, teams are like, okay, well, we have to at least put a little more attention on Russell. And I think that's freed some stuff up for Ant then. Mm-hmm. So like it's all about guys knocking down shots, and they've done that to a large degree. Like you mentioned, you know, Kyle Anderson shooting the ball well, Torian Prince shooting the ball well, D'Lo shooting the ball well. I don't think that's any coincidence that it's a product of Ant. Like, right. Ant is making these field goal percentages go up because these looks are so clean, so open, so like just easy catch and shoots. Like, we talk about star players elevating their teammates. Like, Ant is doing that on the offensive end. Like, mm-hmm. it might not always look like it. It might be like, oh, four assists or whatever, but it's like a hockey assist. And it's because guys are just having no attention paid to them. Like, I tweeted out the one Torian Prince clip. Like, he is one pass away. And there's a Jalen Noel clip like this from, I think, when they played Memphis earlier this month. Like, Torian Prince is one pass away. Torian Prince has been an excellent three-point shooter this year. And the help defender is so much in the gap that it's just one pass, and Torian Prince just
wide open.
Shoot. Like if you're playing five on nobody, you would do that. Mm-hmm. And Jalen Noel, there was one against Memphis where they passed to Jalen Noel and his defender is like three steps off of them. So Jalen Noel just drives to the bucket, like against nobody, and scores. And that's, I think there's more of that out there for Ant. Mm-hmm. If he recognizes it more and more, especially as he gets in these grooves where he's just scoring points with ease. Like, I know that he's thinking I'm in go mode, but these defenses then are collapsing even more in these moments. Right. And I think if he can more balance the, yes, okay, I'm drilling shots right now, but wait, oh, they are like all the way in on me and these other easy passes are there. Like, I think there's an even higher level to this, but I have not seen a player in Minnesota get this type of like, Cat was just in the post, you know, like,
yeah.
And I guess to some degree up top, like on his drives, team would kind of sag in like that too. But Ant, it's like, they want, like you said, sometimes they just want to throw the second defender right away because it's like, we can't stop this guy driving to the basket.
So to me, it's like, if Ant sees two, whether it be the double right away or he kind of brings himself into two, it's like, if he can make the pass from there without it getting stolen, money, right? Without the turnover happening. Like, it's that Torian Prince look. It's going to be a swing into something that should, like, give you well over a point per possession, right? You know, clean looks, if you can get the pass. The problem is, and Ant's ability to navigate to has been praised by all of his teammates, by Chris Finch. And I think that's because it's definitely a progression from where he was a year ago, seeing doubles and his ability to get off of it. I think what we need to acknowledge, though, is it has not been good. Like, no. It has not, yeah, like, in the aggregate, been good. This is like, so Synergy does a thing where they go through pick and rolls, and it's just overall pick and roll numbers. If you do pick and rolls that include passes, Ant is of the 31 highest pick and roll players in the league. He has the fifth highest turnover rate of that. But if you do it to when the defense commits, which is like, basically, I was just going back. I was like, okay, what exactly do they mean by the defense committing? And I watched the ones against Sacramento, and it's basically Sabonis. When he's as the big, he's up and he's committing to Ant. It's not like full high wall, but it's like definitely not in a drop. A more aggressive coverage in a pick and roll. And Ant has been really bad against that in terms of turnovers. Of the 39 players in the league who have ran over 250 pick and rolls where the defense has committed, only Jalen Green turns it over more. It goes Jalen Green the most, Anthony Edwards the second most, Kevin Porter Jr. the third most. And I think that's really telling in that kind of in two ways, that we've watched Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. and they're sloppy offensive players, right? In terms of the frequency that they turn it over. They're also very young players. I would assume they get better at that over time. And Anthony Edwards is the same age as those kids, you know? So I think Anthony Edwards will get better at this navigating. It's like, you just kind of scroll through the list. It's almost like an age progression.
Sure.
Like the bet here, who's the best? In it? Fred VanVleet, you know, like he's been seeing that for 6 years in a row. So I just want to point out that it has still been messy with Ant when he's facing doubles in this from a turnover standpoint.
Why do the Wolves even run pick and rolls with Anthony Edwards?
Because they have Rudy Gobert. I mean, I don't know. I go both ways.
You know, you mentioned more about like, you know, you mentioned how much Rudy was in the dunker spot.
Yeah, I like that.
Recently, and I do too. Like, well, the whole point of pick and roll is kind of to like either generate, give the ball handler easier access to like get to the lane, but like Ant's never going to get that. You know, they're paying so much attention to him. So, and then it's to get two on the ball handler, and Ant gets that before there's a pick and roll. Like, so you've kind of already achieved it just with him up top. So if he just realizes that there, and I think it's easier for him to see the floor in those instances as well. Like,
yeah,
I think just giving Ant the ball up top and saying like, okay, read the defense. Like if they're not squeezing in at the elbows, go ahead. If they are,
hit, you know,
just get off it quick. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Like I think that's much easier offense for him right now than trying to put him in pick and roll situations. I get it. Like you have Rudy Gobert, but just put Rudy down in the dunker spot. Let Ant kind of navigate the offense. He's not a good pick and roll player. We've seen that for a couple of years now. He will get there probably. I mean, hopefully that's the plan, but I don't think it's a necessity right now.
Yeah. And I actually don't feel bad about nitpicking at Ant right now, because I think on the last seven episodes, I've like made a case for why he should be an all-star. Right.
And it's,
the numbers
like,
have been incredible, but
Ant has like anybody, if you ever like say something negative about Ant, people jump on you. You know, he's 21, blah, blah, blah. Why aren't you saying this about X, Y, and Z? Well, we do say about X, Y, and Z. But Ant is like number one dude in the locker room of like, yeah, I need to be better at this. I'm terrible at this. He loves Chris Finch because Chris Finch coaches him so hard and says like, this was terrible, and this was terrible. And that's what Ant responds to. So like, Ant has no problem like taking on criticism and whatnot. Like, so if he can handle it, everybody else should be able to handle it and being criticized as well. Like, that's how players grow. That's how they develop. It's all part of his process, and he understands that.
And this is certainly not true across the media landscape, but I think for the both of us, when we are doing the nitpicking, it's trying to highlight where things can get better.
Right.
And in this one, we just think this will get better over time. I'm just pointing out that it's not, which actually is, I think you could look at that as a positive thing of like, wait, Anthony Edwards is putting up all these numbers. The Wolves went 11-5 in January on his back, and he still turns it over a crazy amount. We're just diagnosing where the turnovers are coming from and if or not that will change over time. This is where they're coming from. And yes, we think it will change as he gets better at reading all these things, as he becomes a better pick and roll player. I mean, this is the one fly in the ointment of Ant's offensive game right now. I'm honestly at the point, like another one we talked about before over the past 2.5 years is the shot selection and the frequency of mid-range jumpers. I'm getting to the point where I'm like, some of these mid-range, these are like nasty. Like it is a good look. Like when Ant can get it, particularly if it's like in there at like 12 feet and that looks easy for him. They're running more actions to get him that. They're starting games with that elbow catch for him in isolation to just go and try and get like a 14-footer right away. Like, I think we've kind of plucked that fly out of the ointment. Now, obviously, a mid-range shot is always in the context of the overall, like, what it generates isn't great. But, like, when Ant isn't on the floor taking that mid-range jumper in those situations, if he wasn't, it's probably a worse shot that you would have gotten on average. I think that is moving in the direction towards really becoming a weapon. And the only thing that hasn't progressed to me is the turnovers.
And like an Ant level player, needs to have that in his game, right? Because teams are so focused on like take away the arc and take away the rim for this guy. So like, where is he going to be left with space to shoot the ball? Mm-hmm. It is the mid range, like, and he is becoming one of those guys who's so comfortable there that like that's just another weapon in his in his arsenal. You know, like Kevin Durant, you're not like a 15 footer, man. Come on, like either get to the rim or shoot the three. And like, yeah, he's so comfortable. He creates space in those. Mm-hmm. You know, those little areas, like what he did in the last few minutes where he just kind of wove through the Sacramento defense and hit that one shot. Like that was such a special play. Like he's getting so good in those areas that, yeah, I don't look at those as like a bad shot. It's not what you want your offense to be built mm-hmm. around. But in like the last 5 minutes of games or whatever, or when he really feels like he's cooking, like, okay, you know, like that's fine to mix it in those moments.
So he's still just looking at it right here. 37% from mid-range on this season. That is that's below average from wings. It is a progression. Your rookie year, 30% from mid-range. Second year, 33%. Now up to 37%. I mean, I guess I could cut this for, I bet it's better, you know, in January. But some people are probably like looking at the stats in the aggregate, like, what the hell are Dane and Jace talking about right now?
This is the shooting for everybody. This is like everybody's numbers, you know, like the things that were so bad in November and still like holding the numbers down now. It's very interesting to look at overall numbers versus what you're seeing in the moment.
Actually, I just did it for January. So those 16 games, the best ant month, everything, still only 38% from mid-range.
Okay.
But I still stand to my point of like situationally, I think it's the best thing that they can get. And in the fourth, oh my God, look at 62% from the corner in January and 40% overall from three. I mean, we are picking nits here. And the one I'm focused on right now is the turnovers. And that was the overtime. Like, again, just as much as the sacks spread offense hurt them, like the turnovers on offense were even worse. Like, that was the bigger problem in overtime. That just wasn't a new thing, right? You know, like we kind of been seeing that throughout the year. Jace, let's wrap this up unless you have anything else. You got anything else on Ant?
Nope, nothing pressing.
So let's wrap this up with Prize Picks. We're actually gonna do a basketball one for today. No NFL games on Sunday. So we're just kind of looking at the slate of Wolves, Warriors picks that are on the board right now. Oftentimes they're not up when we record. I think it's because they're playing the Warriors. Those are all posted there. So it's kind of like the Wolves starters and the Warriors starters, points, rebounds, assists. You can kind of combine all of those into a number that you would pick that they'll get more than or less than. What stood out to you on the board in Wolves Warriors tonight?
Yeah, I think the first one was Ant's points total, 28.5. He's soaring over that largely here in recent games, and so like it's tough not to take the over there. It is interesting, like say he draws like an Andrew Wiggins matchup, like Wiggins pretty good one-on-one defender. Mm-hmm. Certainly against Minnesota will bring some extra juice, but like I'll just go off what I've been seeing, and like Ant 28.5 over is, I don't know, it seems kind of like easy money right now.
It just does feel like with Ant now, right, that you can kind of pencil in like every night 25-5-5, which is crazy. You know, I mean, I thought Ant would get to that point at some time. I think I said this yesterday, like I did not expect this at 21 years old. Like we're also talking about like flies in the ointment with him. Consistency hasn't been one of them either. Like they got rid of that.
Right.
He has consistently been bankable for being a stat stuffer. So I got no problem with an Ant over. The one I liked most was, of course, I went to Andrew Wiggins playing against the Wolves. His total for points, rebounds, and assists is 22.5. I mean, I feel like he's going to get 20 just points against the Wolves. Wiggins isn't a big rebounder or assister unless it's the NBA Finals, but I think Andrew Wiggins will have more than 22.5 points, rebounds, assists. And then the other one that just stood out to me, I was just kind of quickly clicking through that this morning, but blocks plus steals, D'Angelo Russell and Jaden McDaniels had the same number at 1.5. And I was like, okay, that doesn't really make sense to me. I looked it up. D'Angelo's averaging 1.1 steals per game and 0.4 blocks. And Jaden is averaging one steal and one block a game. So I guess Jaden's averaging over 1.5. Kind of surprised me that D'Angelo's was even close there. I mean, he's only had two steals in, I think it was 12 games this season. He had like one game where it was like seven and a couple when it was like five. So I don't think on average we should be expecting D'Angelo Russell to have 1.5 blocks plus steals per game. So I'm going less than 1.5 on that for D'Lo.
I will say, like, D'Lo is somebody where, like, his steals are often, like, kind of find the loose ball or whatever. And, like, Golden State does just throw the ball around a lot.
That's a good point, actually.
And Jaden, like, on the ball, it's, I would say, like, D'Lo, I would say D'Lo is more likely to get it than Jaden. I don't know if either will. But yeah, that's not what I'm picking either. I'm just,
it was just interesting. We talk about, like, Jaden McDaniels, one of the best perimeter defenders, and D'Angelo Russell, that, like, that's a weakness. And they have the same, that shows you how bad box score defensive stats are, because maybe you're right, you know, maybe D'Lo does have more than Jaden tonight. I guess that's not crazy. What was your other pick?
Yeah, I'm going Draymond over 7.5 assists. And this is like a good line for him, because I mean, in this last five games, he had 12 against OKC, but then he had 7-7-7 the three games prior. I just think Minnesota is going to sag off of him, as everyone does, to a massive degree. But like, I think Green will probably find some teammates for easy buckets, or just working off of him where it's the dribble handoffs, all that stuff. Like, I expect Draymond Green to have a very high assist total and have a sneaky good game.
That is going to be the interesting thing about this game, right? Is just how they function again. Even like the spread offense of last night aside, it's just a different look. And the Golden State is playing differently now with Draymond at the five. I mean, Looney's going to play some, but he's now coming off the bench. So that will like kind of be like the Nas minutes that would match up with Looney more so. Like when Rudy's on the floor, the starters are on the floor, I think the majority of the time it's going to be a spread look, even if it's not a five shooter look from Golden State. So I'm interested to see.
How do you think they all match up tonight? Like, say the Wolves tried out the same starting five they usually do. Does it go Jaden on Curry, Ant on Poole?
Well, I was thinking
D'Lo on Clay and Anderson on Wiggins.
That's kind of what I was thinking. That's not like normally how, and then Draymond on, or Rudy on Draymond.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not one that like makes perfect sense. Like, we've also kind of seen the Wolves put D'Lo on in the starting lineup on that second perimeter creator. So I could see him on Poole too. Do you want?
That's just a tough ask. That's,
but so is Clay. Like,
yeah, that's true. But Poole is the guy who I think on the ball could make D'Lo look worse, you know, where Clay, it's like, okay, your task is to run around with Clay, you know, but it's Golden State will just tax Minnesota. Like they will push them as they do to a lot of teams. But like, this is really going to tax Minnesota's just general perimeter defense, because you're asking everybody to do it.
Yeah, it is as much of a matchup in the league, I think, right now, where the Wolves are just significantly bigger than their opponent. And even without Kat, come playoffs too. Like I don't know right now if that's an advantage or disadvantage for this team. It kind of needs to become one, I think, because it is baked into their identity, size, not just height, but length as well. And this will be a test of that, because you're not going to get much smaller teams than what Golden State starting five is. So
I don't want to overanalyze this matchup, because I know like it's only like 5 hours where this podcast exists before the game starts. But I'm interested to see like the transition. Like, Minnesota had gone a little bit more on the offensive glass recently, and Jaden McDaniels had even said like he got more license to go for the offensive glass than get back in transition. Yeah. And I think part of that's like not Rudy and Carl playing together, just Rudy. So transition defense comes a little more naturally, but Golden State's playing really, really fast and getting up and down. And they always do. They like push, they will push when it's not even smart to do so.
They did against the Wolves. Remember that? Yes, I mean, yeah. It was like 21-5 or something. Yeah.
Dumb turnovers, because they're just pushing every single play, but Minnesota's advantage here should be on the offensive glass. Like, so like that balance of like, are you trying to keep up with Golden State getting back, or are you trying to do what should be like your forte in this game? It's going to be a very interesting kind of give and take there.
What do you think will happen? Like, do you think they will go more aggressive? Like, I don't know what Finch will do there.
I don't know either. I don't know. I mean, Rudy should go offensively on the offensive glass, and everybody else probably won't. Everybody else will probably get back.
Yeah, no, I think that, again, interesting matchup, just given that it it is an opponent that should be able to expose some of the things that are weaknesses. And it is an opponent that the Wolves should be able to scrape back weaknesses against as well. And it's against a team that's a lot more veteran, experienced, all that stuff. And they're playing at a high level right now. Like, I think this is going to be a tough game for the Wolves tonight. And obviously, sometimes that just means they're going to play better given the opponent. But it's another one where it will be one of those, if the Wolves win this game, I'll be like, all right, like, respect, like, that is a good win. I mean, I know it's home and everything, but Golden State is playing well. We talked last week about how they're catching all these teams, catching the Pelicans in the midst of a big losing streak. The Grizzlies have been struggling. You know, now you're getting Golden State, who's playing really well. Even Orlando, who they play on Friday, is
just beat Philly. They're playing really well.
Yeah. Something like, I don't remember. Like, they have an over 500 record, I think, in their last 25 games or so. So
yes,
it's still like this time, this homestand, the 6-game homestand is critical. You drop that one against the Kings. But I still think you got to go like 4-2, 5-1 in this homestand. And I don't think that's going to be necessarily an easy slate for them, because Denver's the sixth and final one of that homestand as well. Like we were saying, they match up decently against, but that's obviously one of the best teams in the NBA. So as always, we have no idea what this team is going to do against anyone, but it could be good. It could be bad, to be determined. Again, if you want to play Prize Picks along with Jace and I, and you're listening to this on Wednesday before the game, they do have the Wolves Warriors slate up there. Maybe you've been playing along with us with our NFL picks, so you have an account and you can try out some NBA. If you're very annoyed by our NFL segments out here, you're like, why are they talking about football on a basketball podcast? Fair. This was at least basketball related, so you can check that out on prizepicks.com or on the Prize Picks app. Promo code Dane for a $100 sign up bonus. Not a sports book, it's daily fantasy, so you can play in Minnesota. Jace, appreciate you doing it. I'll see you at the stadium here in a couple hours.
Looking forward to it.
All right, he's Jace Frederick. Follow him on Twitter at Jace Frederick. You can read his article up at the Pioneer Press. He wrote about the spread offense that the Wolves struggled against the Kings on Monday. So give that a read, and you can always listen to Jace every Wednesday here with me. Until then, he's Jace. I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around. Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.